Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the CIA blowback when we come back. You know, when the federal income tax was launched back in 1913, the tax was levied only on the super wealthy, the rich, the richest one-half of 1% of the population, and the top tax rate was only 7%. Now, today, of course, the fears of those early opponents of this tax have been more than fully realized. By the end of Herbert Hoover's term, the top tax rate had jumped to 60%. And by the time Franklin D. Roosevelt was done, the top tax rate was over 90%. And the tax had been dramatically expanded to seize the incomes of the middle class. Now, when you compare this to the plight of medieval serfs, says economist Daniel J. Mitchell, they only had to give the lord of the manor a third of their output and they were considered slaves. Now, what does that make us today? Now, this income tax and Social Security violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant, including our English common law. And the income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal activities. And that's because the income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. Social Security is the eighth plank. Now, that's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask the question, do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? If you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. And best of all, it's free. And that number again, 417-273-4967. Tax and status. The school is available on compact disc for adult home education, and if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or that telephone number, 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're talking about the CIA, an interview by a fellow named Johnson, who was a Cold War warrior, he calls himself. He worked for the CIA as an advisor of some type here, and he's a professor at the University of California in Berkeley. That doesn't say much for him, since he's at Berkeley as a radical left-wing school, but his name is Chalmers Johnson. He was interviewed by Acres USA. It's in the October 2006 edition, and we're reviewing that story. He said, if you'll remember last time, that even if you're an honest congressman, and even if you wanted to maintain oversight on the black budget within the Department of Defense, you simply can't do it because you can't get the information. Can't get the information because it's off the books. That's why it's called the black budget. Now, the CIA has a black budget. They have a budget that's published. It's in the budget every year. And then they have spending, or they have allocations for spending that's off the books that nobody knows about. Well, the Department of Defense, 40% of what's spent in the Department of Defense is off budget. Now, they're spending about $500 billion a year. If 40% of that $500 billion, which is $20 billion, well, it's $200 billion, it's $500 billion is what they're spending, so that's a half a trillion, so you take another 40% of that would be another $200 billion. And that would be a total of $700 billion a year for the defense budget. But it doesn't show up anywhere. doesn't show up. Nobody knows about it. We don't know if it's 40% or 20% or 60%. Nobody knows for sure. And this guy Chalmers, who's a CIA spook, says, well, he thinks it's around 40%. And even if you were an honest congressman and you wanted to do something about it, it's too far out of control. There's nothing you can do about it. I talked to Helen Chenoweth, and she died not too long ago in a car wreck, which was kind of a tragedy because we had Ron Paul and Helen Chenoweth. There was two honest congressmen that I knew of in the United States of America. Out of 535 House and Senate members, I knew of two that were honest. Helen said when I asked her about my daughter, at the time she was about, 15, 16 years old, and I said, you got a PAGE program back there in Washington. What do I have to do to get my daughter into that PAGE program so that she can go back to Washington, get some political experience? And Helen said, oh, I wouldn't recommend that she go into the PAGE program. I said, why not? And she said, because she thought that half of the members of the Congress were pedophiles, sex perverts, or that there was some kind of deviant behavior amongst that 50%. She said, I don't know that positively, but I suspect that it's that high. Your daughter isn't coming back a virgin. I'll guarantee you that. I said, oh. So we put the kibosh on that. I wouldn't think of sending my daughter into a cesspool like that. Now, you've been learning about this PAGE program and the sex pervert and the scandal from this congressman, down in Florida. And she said that she thought half of them were that way. You've got a number of representatives and senators in the Congress today that are avowed homosexuals. They run on the fact that they're homosexual. Homosexuals, pedophiles, and sexual deviants. She thought 50% of them were. And she worked with them there for 6 years, day in and day out. Now, that institution's not going to clean itself up. Even if you were an honest congressman and you wanted to maintain oversight on this black budget within the Department of Defense, you simply can't do it because you can't get the information. The Congress is not going to reform itself. You're not going to take half of them who are sexual perverts, sodomites, and etc., and expect that thing to straighten itself up, if indeed it's half. So the Acres reporter asked, well, what happens when total bankruptcy sweeps our country? Have you ever thought about that, boys and girls? What do you think is going to happen when total bankruptcy sweeps the nation? That's what happened in 1933 with the closing of the banks and the near doubling of the price of gold from $20 to $35 an ounce and the Great Depression. We just saw it happen down in Argentina here a few years back. The Argentines, they went through bankruptcy, couldn't pay their bills. They went immediately on COD. They had 62% unemployment, rapid inflation. They had riots in the streets. People couldn't get their money out of the bank. It total chaos, a great turnover of property. They're getting things under control today. The Argentine economy is growing at about 8% a year. But there is a period of destabilization. There's a period of chaos that comes. Well, what do you think is going to happen here in America? Did you see what happened in 1929 through about 1937? All right, now, do you think that could happen again? If you talk to the average waitress down here at Skeeter's, I don't think she grasps the significance of America having to borrow $2 billion a day. Every day, our nation, our institutions, our government has to borrow $2 billion a day. It's headed to $3 now. Just to pay our bills. That would be like you, having to go out and borrow $20 every day to keep your household running. So the question is, what happens when total bankruptcy sweeps the country? Johnson said it's hard to know what would happen then, whether we would have an orgy of blaming people or whether we would try to reconstitute what is a unique political document, namely our American Constitution. On the other hand, it's not just the current administration, by any means, that has caused these problems. This has been building throughout the rise of the warfare state. It goes back to the 1940s when we talk about the black budget. That's the budget that's simply off the books. That's not something invented by the Bush administration. It started with the Manhattan Project in the Roosevelt administration during World War II to build atomic bombs. And what I fear is that we're now beginning to pay the cost of the Manhattan Project. Akers asks this question. Well, will it cause us to take our bases out of Germany and to get out of South Korea and places like that? Johnson. It's more than likely that the so-called host countries will ask us to do just that. Now, they've been doing that anyway. But certainly, we won't be able to afford an armed force of that sort that we have there today, which, again, is not particularly effective for national security. Our military bases in Germany and South Korea don't do anything to protect California, New Mexico, Arizona, or Texas. And that's why we've created another department, which is called Homeland Security. Nobody's ever been able to quite explain why we need a Department of Homeland Security when we already have a Department of Defense. And a Department of Defense that costs $500 billion a year. But we do. We have Homeland Security. Akers asks, well, one other question that has occurred to us, or a lot of us here, is where is the CIA in all of this? Johnson responds, well, I was a consultant to the Office of National Estimates of the CIA between 1967 and 1973, so I do have some inside knowledge of how the CIA operates. The CIA is a private army of the president. Let me repeat that, children, in case you missed it. Here's a guy, a CIA spook, and he says that the CIA is the private army of the president. Well, isn't that what Hitler's SS was? Wasn't that the private army of the Führer? That's what I thought that was. Now, that's how it should be understood. Since the National Security Act was passed in 1947, when then President Truman, and no president since, or once he discovered that he had at his command a private army that was totally without oversight, operating under a black budget except his personally, has ever failed to use it. Every president has used the CIA as his personal private army. And I argue in my current book that neither the United States nor the rest of the world will ever know peace so long as the Central Intelligence Agency exists in its current form. In the Bible, there's a statement that says, peace, peace, when there is no peace. Jeremiah mentions that twice. That we'd come to a point in history when our political leaders would be crying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. Children, there's been no peace on planet Earth during the 20th century. It's just been one war after another. And 201 military applications of violent force have been used by the United States, and that since 1940. And yet, every time you turn on the news, you know, you hear Kofi Annan at the United Nations talking about peace in the Middle East. And George Bush, you know, when he's talking about the Middle East or South Korea or North Korea or Iran, he's talking about peace, peace. And Tony Blair, all peace, peace. This is the first guy that I've heard make this statement. Here's a public official. Here's an ex-CIA spook. And then he says, you'll never have peace as long as the CIA exists. Then he went on to say, as I say, it's a private army of the president. It isn't particularly an intelligence agency as much as it is a military covert operation agency. The CIA is there to overthrow the Venezuelan government. The CIA is there to overthrow the Nicaragua government. And they've been good at it. The CIA overthrew the Iranian government in 1953 and the Iraqi government. And the CIA has been instrumental around the world in setting up puppet regimes that work for the American government or the American empire. Now, you know, we probably all knew that. We've been watching it. We read our newspapers. But we just haven't had anybody come along and put it in that context and just tell us plainly, this is the American empire with military bases and military personnel in 137 countries around the world that has instigated 201 military operations since World War II, 1940. I mean, that's just where it's at, and this is the next CIA spook, and he comes along and says, hey, you kids aren't going to have peace as long as you got the CIA. And this guy down in Venezuela, you know, Chavez, he'll be overthrown. Rest assured. No doubt in my mind. They'll throw him out. And they'll put money down there, and they'll get discontent going on among the locals down there. And pretty soon they'll have riots in the streets, and pretty soon somebody will shoot him. I wouldn't be surprised, but what it was the CIA operatives there that killed President Kennedy, or that the CIA instigated that whole 9/11 thing over there with the trade towers being knocked down. And many of you people out there. In fact, here's an interesting number. One-third of Americans, one out of every three Americans, drawing breath today in the year 2006, believe that the Bush administration had something to do with the 9/11 attack. One out of three. And if you're one of those one out of three, you've got a lot of company. And if you're one of the majority, the two out of three, that doesn't believe it or hadn't heard that concept before, and we'll wake up. Now, to show you how that little game is played here, in 1933, Adolf Hitler burned the Reichstag building and blamed it on the communists. It was actually the Nazis that burned it and then blamed it on the communists so that he could take dictatorial control. In 1915, the United States was sending arms to Great Britain. In fact, it was so blatant that the Germans, who knew about it, took out five newspaper ads in the United States. Five newspaper ads. It was the German embassy in Washington, D.C. that paid five big newspapers, including the Los Angeles Times and the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, and two other papers. And they said, if we catch the Lusitania on the high seas, we're going to sink it. Five newspapers, German embassy, says that ship is carrying arms for Great Britain. And the United States claims that they're neutral. Now, the Lusitania, remember, was a British merchant ship. It was a passenger liner like the Titanic. And to show you how blatant the United States and the Wilson administration was, the British had different size and calibers of guns and different sizes of mortars than the United States, different sizes of artillery shells. So in Fort Wayne, Indiana, there was a plant. They had plants in other places, but there was a specific plant in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And that's all they did was turn out munitions for the British in the British size and caliber of munitions. And then when the British passenger liners would show up at New York, they would secretly load it with these munitions that were being built by a neutral country, the United States, and then shipped to Great Britain for the war effort against Germany. So naturally, the Germans, no, they're not dummies. They said, well, you know, if you guys want to play that game, but then, you know, you put yourself in harm's way. And sure enough, the Lusitania gets over to England and a German submarine saw it and sank it. And there was a couple hundred Americans on it. The objective was to get the American public so aroused that we would go to war on Britain's side. That's a fifth column operation. Now, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, remember that in 1916? 68, I believe it was, somewhere along in there, President Johnson, when he campaigned for president back in 64, I guess that Gulf of Tonkin thing came about 64. Anyway, Johnson said that no American boy is going to be sent to Vietnam if I'm elected president. And then he pictured Barry Goldwater as the nut, you know, the war nut. Well, Barry Goldwater in the 1964 election was pictured as a loose cannon on the ship. Johnson won the election, and he said, no American boy will go to Vietnam on my watch. The first troop ship left for Vietnam under the Johnson administration in January 1965, and it takes 4 months to get a troop transport ready to ship troops. Now, he made that statement in October, just before the election, October of 64. Now, I added up, October, November, December, January. Takes 4 months, kids. Pearl Harbor was another one of those events. You see, when we go to public school, they teach us what they want us to know. But here's what they didn't teach you when you went to school. 1937, President Roosevelt ordered an embargo on oil being shipped to Japan. That's right, they shut off the oil going to Japan. And so from 37 to 41, the Japanese are scrambling for oil. So they went to war against China and Manchuria to get oil. They needed oil. And so they couldn't get it from the Dutch and Indonesia. Couldn't get it from the Americans. And so they said, well, we'll go take it away from the Chinese. And so this policy went on until 1941. The Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor in part, if not in whole, because of our embargo on their oil. Now, just picture this. What do you think America would do if the Iranians and the Iraqis and the Saudi Arabians and the Russians and the Chinese all got together and embargoed oil from the Middle East to the United States? I guarantee you, war would be the result the next morning. No doubt in my mind. So I'm not surprised that the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. I was surprised that it took them 5 years to do it. And it was a policy aimed at that exact outcome. You see, the Great Depression needed a stimulus, and there's no greater stimulus for economic laggards than war. War is what brought us out of the Great Depression in the final analysis. And this author points that out, that by 1950 they said, you know, we're going to slip back into depression. We've got to have an enemy. We've got to have a Cold War. We got to have armaments building. And we've had that armaments building from 1940 until today. And there's no let up in sight. Boys and girls, we don't need B-2 bombers and nuclear weapons to deal with terrorists, you know, that are putting improvised explosives alongside the road. And what are you going to do with a 20 megaton bomb against those insurgents in Iraq? But we're out here building that kind of stuff every day. Every day. That's what keeps Boeing and Lockheed Martin and all these big military operations going. You know, we've got 12 aircraft carriers. Last time I heard there was a number put to it, about 12 aircraft carrier battle groups, you know, running around the world. Hell, there isn't anybody else in the world. The only people with aircraft carriers is Great Britain, as far as I know. Only American Britain have any. The British have a couple of three. We got 12. The Russians don't have any. The Chinese don't have any. And the last time I checked, Osama bin Laden didn't have an aircraft carrier either. But we're out here just building ships and building, you know, we got this big navy. We got, what for? What do you need that for? You need it to maintain your economy. Kids, you know, if we didn't have this military-industrial complex, we wouldn't have anything to get up for and go to work to do. And that's what this author's telling us. Now, Acres USA asks the question, but it's not very effective, is it? When it posits non-existent weapons of mass destruction in a country that's been under surveillance for 9 years, asking the question, how is the CIA as an intelligence operation? And Akers asked the question, well, it wasn't very effective in telling us that Saddam Hussein did or did not have weapons of mass destruction. Now listen to this insider. Johnson answers, he said, we'd have to ask the question, effective at what? It's been extremely effective at overthrowing foreign, often democratically elected governments that irritate one or another group within the United States. Going back to our overthrow of Prime Minister Mossadegh in Iran back in 1953 in order to serve the interests of the British Petroleum Company. So the CIA overthrew the Iranian government in 1953 at the request of Great Britain and British Petroleum. So what does the CIA do, though, in telling us that, well, Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction? They said, yeah, he's got weapons of mass destruction. And then when we got over there, we couldn't find any. I'm not surprised that Saddam didn't have weapons of mass destruction. The thing that I was surprised about was that President Bush didn't think to ship over 4 or 5 C-5A loads of weapons of mass destruction and plant them there. Any policeman worth his salt knows enough that when he arrests somebody on drug charges and opens the trunk and there's no drugs, they plant them there. And you mean to tell me that the United States government comes out here and sells us this war in Iraq? And then when we get there, there are no weapons of mass destruction? Now you talk about inept and incompetent. The Bush administration has got to be just plain stupid not to plant the weapons of mass destruction there. They've got plenty of them in Fort Detrick, Maryland. All they got to do is load them on a couple of 3 airplanes, haul them over there and say, hey, kids, look what we found. Now somebody's going to say, yeah, but they're going to say made in the USA. Children. Donald Rumsfeld in 1983-84. Went over to Baghdad and was pictured with Saddam Hussein. Remember, they were at war with the Iranians. The Iranians had captured and held a bunch of Americans at the American embassy, remember, in 79 and 80? And so we didn't like the Iranians, and the Iranians didn't like us because, you know, we've been meddling in their affairs since 1953. And you know, we've been running that puppet Shah of Iran government since 1953. They didn't like that. And so here's Donald Rumsfeld, he's over in Iraq in 1983, and we are shipping gas and weapons of mass destruction to Saddam Hussein in the 1980s for the war against Iran. You know, the Iraqis were at war with Iran, and we were backing the Iraqis. Do you remember that? All of Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction, including all of the nerve gases that he was using against the Iranians, were made in Fort Detrick, Maryland. They all were stamped made in America. The thing that screwed up our intelligence was that after the Gulf War in 1991, he destroyed all the weapons of mass destruction. And I guess our Bush administration figured, well, surely he wouldn't do that. And when we get over there, we know he's got them because we sold them to him. And then when we got there, he double-crossed us and destroyed them all. And the Bush administration hadn't taken that into consideration, so they didn't take any over and plant them. That's what I find at fault with the Bush administration. Not only are they incompetent, they're inept and dumb on top of it. They suffer from the terminal stupids. Now, FDR was a little smarter. See, he shut off the oil to the Japanese and sat back and waited. You know, at some point in time, the Japs are going to get a belly full of this, and they're going to come over, and they're going to attack us. And when they do, then that'll give us the excuse that we need to go to war, which is what the American foreign policy was aimed at. We shut off their oil so that they'll get mad at us, attack us. We need an enemy. We need somebody to go to war against. And remember, the Bush administration was talking war long before 9/11. As soon as they got into office, well, what do we have to do to get Saddam Hussein on the hook so that we can go to war? We need a war. Remember, the recession began in March of 2000 under the Clinton administration. By the time the Bush administration took office in January of 2001, they needed a stimulus for the American economy. Boys and girls, there's no better stimulus for the economy than war. It's been working from 1940 to 2000. Well, now we've got to have some place to use it. Now remember, this is in the Acres USA. The voice of Echo Agriculture, the price is $5. If you want just this one copy, it's $27 a year. $27 a year. And they're down in Austin, Texas. Let me give you a name and address. It's Acres USA. The address is Post Office Box 91299, Austin, Texas, 78709-1299. Again, that's P.O. Box 91299, Austin, Texas, 78709-1299. So if you send them a $5 bill in an envelope and say, give me the October 2006 magazine and publication, they'll send that to you. They've got a website too. It's www.acresusa.com. It's an easy one, acresusa.com. And they've got news releases, general information orders, and advertising, meeting announcements, requests for permission to print. I mean, they got several emails. Faxes, pretty good size operation. Acres USA. Oh, they got a phone number here too. Let me give you that. That's 512-892-4400. Again, that's area code 512-892-4400. Austin, Texas. I imagine if you just got acresusa.com, I think you could get their names and numbers and all the information that you need. Hey, we're at the halfway point here, children. I got to give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page at the website georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives and can be accessed through the webpage. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours. Just call the law school and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give out do not mean that those authors or publications are going to endorse or recommend the Law Hour. Most of the authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed in total by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. And these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. And if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. The author of this article over here, his name is Chalmers Johnson. He's a professor at the University of California at Berkeley. He's talking about the consequences of empire, how blowback and militarism are destroying our economy. This series of programs is called The CIA and Blowback. And Mr. Johnson is being interviewed by Acres USA. Now, we're talking about the CIA and its operations. And he says, Acres USA asks this question, but it's not very effective, is it, when it posits non-existent weapons of mass destruction in a country that's been under surveillance for 9 years? And Johnson replied, we'd have to ask the question, effective at what? The CIA has been extremely effective at overthrowing foreign and often democratically elected governments. Now, the next government to be overthrown, boys and girls, is Venezuela, and it's a democratically elected government. In fact, they've been elected twice, and we're busily trying to destabilize Venezuela at this moment and overthrow that Chavez government. After all, it's a communist government. This guy Chavez is buddies with Fidel Castro, and Fidel Castro is an open communist. But children, wait a second. Hang on a minute. The United States of America, we have a central bank in this country called the Federal Reserve Bank. And that's the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for a central bank. Children, in this country, we have an income tax, a heavy progressive income tax. That's the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. Children, in this country, we have a public education system, a public school system. That is the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. Children, we Americans here in the United States practice all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Not 3, 5, 7, or 9, all 10. If Chavez and the Venezuelan government practices all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, I find it hard to believe that there's any need for America to overthrow a communist government in Venezuela when we Americans are operating a communist government in the United States of America. You know, Jesus of Nazareth made an observation. He said, "You will know them by their fruits, not by their much speaking." Now, the Ten Commandments are the exact opposite. The Ten Commandments are the antithesis to communism. You see, the Social Security system, which is the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto, is denounced by Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36, which prohibits limited liability, prohibits insurance. We Americans have health insurance, auto insurance, homeowners insurance, fire insurance. Insurance is a part and parcel of the American way of life, strictly prohibited by the Mosaic Law and by God Almighty. Strict liability is the order of thou shalt not steal. Strict liability is the order of the Ten Commandments. So, you know, to point fingers at this guy Chavez or Fidel Castro and call him communist when we have a public school system, the 10th plank, we have a central bank, the 5th plank, we have a heavy progressive income tax, the 2nd plank, and we have a social security system, the 8th plank, I find it hard for us, the kettle, to call the pot black, don't you? Acres USA asked this question concerning Allende. Now, for a lot of you kids out there, you probably never heard the name Allende. Would Allende from Chile be in that group? I'm talking about democratically elected governments. There was a guy by the name of Salvador Allende, who was elected by the people of Chile. He was a communist, like this guy Chavez, like Fidel Castro. But he was elected. You know what I mean? I mean, we elected George Bush, so, you know, it's pretty hard now to sit here and say, well, you know, this guy Bush is a jerk. Hey, you voted for him. He didn't get in there, you know, because he was the only vote that was cast for George Bush. He was the lawfully elected president of Chile. His name was Salvador Allende. He was a communist. And so Henry Kissinger at the time was the Secretary of State. And so, you know, he advised the president, this is President Nixon. He says, hey, listen, we got to get rid of this guy. This guy's bad news. And so our CIA went down there and we overthrew the democratically elected government of Chile, which at the time made all the sense in the world. This is at the height of the Cold War, 1970. And then we installed a guy by the name of Pinochet. Now, this guy Pinochet is in the news to this day. He's about 85, 90 years old. And he took over down there, and he murdered, he killed. You know, communists, you know, they take over a government, and then they go out and they kill a bunch of people. Well, this guy, Pinochet now, he's a CIA asset, and he goes out and he kills all of these communists. Well, now the Supreme Court, I just saw a little piece in the paper the other day, and it said that the Supreme Court down there in Chile wants to put him on trial. And there's been a big legal battle over the last 5 or 10 years over this General Pinochet. I wish he'd just die, you know, and he'd go away, but he's still hanging on. He's pushing 90 now, and they want to put him on trial. I don't know what the hell they're going to do after they put him on trial, find him guilty and lock him up in prison, I guess. But just in case you hadn't heard that name Allende, and you hadn't heard that story, you know, for many of you people out there, probably happened before you were born. It was 1970 or 71 that deal came down. Well, that was a CIA black box operation. They went down there and overthrew a democratically elected government. We've done that all over the world. I don't know how many of these governments we've overthrown, but, you know, we overthrew the Philippine government, Nicaragua's government, Grenada, Chile, and now Iraq and Afghanistan. And that's just a handful of them, you know, that I can think of right off the top of my head. I imagine, you know, if we got down, opened up the history books and said, geez, how many governments have been overthrown by the United States since World War II? And I wouldn't be a bit surprised, but what is 25, 30, 40 maybe? I don't know. But it's a bunch. Now, what would you think if the Russians were running around overthrowing governments? I mean, that was the stuff of the Cold War. You know, when the Russians came over and took over Cuba, remember that Cuban Missile Crisis? And, you know, the President Kennedy, you know, everybody got real excited, you know, about the Russians taking over Cuba. They're real excited about the Russians getting a foothold in Africa and Asia. Real concerned about the domino theory, they called that. And that was the Russians and the Chinese and the communists. They're trying to take over the world. And so they ran out of empire, and so now it's the United States taking over the world. We call it the New World Order. See, we're in the process of establishing our own hegemony over the world, called the New World Order. George Bush, remember, he was President 41. No, they call him Bush 41. And that's the current president's daddy. He used to use the world, the term, you know, New World Order quite often. Quite often. So that's where we're headed, kids, this New World Order. And it's going to succeed for a short period of time. And it's going to usher in what the Bible calls, or Bible prophecy talks about, the Great Tribulation. Boy, that's going to be hell on earth. You talk about hell on wheels. The Messiah. This is Matthew 24. Here's a little reading assignment for you. Take a look at Matthew 24. Take you about 15, 20 minutes to read it. And you'll find a little clause in there that says, if I don't come back and step in here, there will no flesh be left alive on planet earth. No flesh left alive. You know, that's what Dr. Edward Teller was telling us back in the 1950s with the advent of the hydrogen bomb. In 1957, the year that I finished high school. Didn't graduate, but I finished. I finished because I quit. But in 1957, Dr. Edward Teller wrote a series of articles that were published in the Chronicle or Examiner down in San Francisco. And he was describing the nuclear potential here of these atomic bombs. And in 1957, the United States had enough nuclear capacity, he estimated, to annihilate all life from off the planet 44 times over. And that was in 1957. Right, at kind of up front, you know, in the hydrogen bomb era. And the Russians wanted to catch up because, see, they could only annihilate every planet or all life on the planet about 10 times over. And so they went to work and they reached nuclear parity sometime around 1970. When SALT I came in, the Russians and the Americans had nuclear parity. That is, both sides had enough nuclear capacity to annihilate all life from off the planet 44 times over. Hell, I thought once or twice or three times at the max, you know, ought to be plenty, don't you? And so here's this CIA spook saying, hey, listen, the whole purpose for all of these 12,000 nukes that we've got here in the United States, and that was the last number I heard, 12,000 nukes that we have, and the Russians had 8,000 nukes. So we've still got more nukes than the Russians. Now, the last I heard, that Russia has 54 targets and America has 400. So if the Russians have 8,000 and we've got 12,000, that's 20,000 nukes. Now, the Chinese, they're a bunch of pikers. Last I heard, they've only got 400. And the Pakistanis, you know, that great nuclear power in Pakistan, they get 64 nukes. I don't know who's counting these nukes now. If the CIA couldn't figure out if Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, I can't imagine how the CIA could possibly know that the Pakistanis have 64 nukes. But that's the number that's ascribed to them, 64. And India has about 50. So the Pakistanis have a few more than the Indians have. Last time I heard. Now, nobody's been able to figure out how many nukes the Israelis have. Now, everybody's pretty sure that they've got nuclear weapons. We don't know if they got 50, 100, 200, but, you know, there's a few there. But everybody else in the world, that is the French, the British, the Pakistanis and Indians, the Chinese, and now the North Koreans, and you add all those guys up together, and hell, they ain't got 1,000. The Russians have 8. We got 12. 12 and 8 is 20. 20,000 nukes. 400 targets in the United States. I would say that out of 8,000 nukes, the Russians ought to be able to hit 400 targets in the United States. And America's only got 53 targets in the Soviet Union. 53 targets, for crying out loud. I don't know how many we got in China. You know how many targets there are, but 12,000 ought to take care of that. And then we can have this nuclear night. Now, we're talking about peace. Remember that? Peace. Jeremiah. You know, God Almighty through Jeremiah says, you know, there's going to come a time when they're talking about peace. Boys and girls, all my life, that's all I've ever heard is peace. My God, I'm tired of the word peace. And all we've had is war. And then in the New Testament, I think it was James that said, the way of peace they know not. And I'd kind of figure that that's just about accurate. I don't think Bill Clinton could figure out the way to peace. I don't think that the Jews or the Palestinians, and I don't think that Saddam Hussein or the Egyptians or the Chinese or the Russians or the Americans or anybody else, I don't think there's anybody on this planet that's got a clue as to how to bring peace. And this author, a CIA spook, says as long as you've got the CIA, you will have no peace. That's his words, not mine. So would Allende from Chile be in that group? And Johnson says, certainly. Richard Helms, the only director of the CIA ever to be cited and convicted of a felony, when he was asked in Congress directly whether the CIA had anything to do with the overthrow of Salvador Allende and bringing to power in Chile one of the most despicable military leaders anywhere on earth, namely General Pinochet. And here's the CIA spook. He says, despicable military leaders. Not an honorable military leader, but a despicable one. Helms said no. He was tried and convicted for lying to Congress because the CIA had everything to do with it. And the details are now well known because they've now been published. But the CIA has been reasonably effective at that kind of thing. At state terrorism. I'm going to underline that. Now here's a CIA spook. He says, but the CIA has been reasonably effective at that kind of thing at state terrorism. Now remember, we're at war against terrorists, and we're the good guys in white hats, aren't we? The good guys, the Americans, the guys in white hats, and we're opposed to the terrorists. And then we overthrow a democratically elected government in Chile and install what this CIA spook says is one of the most despicable military leaders anywhere on earth, General Pinochet. We call ourselves, you know, we're over here in America pointing our fingers at everybody else in the world and saying, hey, the kettle over there is black. The kettle's black, and we're the guys pointing the finger? I don't know, kids. Now, it's a fairly despicable organization, but it's considered handy for the president to have a kind of sleazy gang of trained assassins at his disposal. This is a CIA spook. Listen to this. He said, but it's considered handy for the president, this President Bush, to have a kind of sleazy gang of trained assassins. The CIA, he says, is a sleazy gang of trained assassins at the disposal of President Bush. I have a little doubt in my mind about what that sleazy gang of professional assassins will kill this guy Chavez. What I'm surprised is they haven't killed him yet. They haven't killed him yet. I don't know why. We don't like him. We don't want him. The Bush administration wants him out. They tried to overthrow him. And the people down there in Venezuela voted him back in. By a hell of a lot bigger margin than Americans voted Bush in. So he's more popular in Venezuela than Bush is in America. Especially today. Remember, this spook said, even if you're an honest congressman and you wanted to maintain oversight on the black budget within the Department of Defense, you simply can't do it because you can't get the information. Akers asks him this question and says, well, they've been accused of actually piloting dope into the United States. Is there anything to that? Have any of you heard about the CIA and the drug connection? Well, here's Johnson, the CIA spook, and he says, I think there's every reason to believe that the CIA did help fund Ronald Reagan's counter-revolutionaries in Nicaragua through the sale of crack cocaine in the United States. Well, let me ask you this. If the CIA was hauling crack cocaine into the United States to fund the Reagan administration's war against the Nicaraguans, which, by the way, was another government installed by elections. And what that means is, you see, if people in another country elect a government that we don't like, we want to overthrow it. So in Chile in 1970, when we didn't like the Allende government, we overthrew it. And then when we didn't like the government in Nicaragua, we overthrew it. And when we don't like the government in Iraq, we overthrow it. And then we come along and say, well, we're going to install a democratic government in Iraq. Maybe that was our intention. But I was just watching the news the other night, and there's a commission report coming out. Former Secretary of State Baker, he's an Illuminist. He's in the Illuminati. He's in the Committee of 300, and he's going to come out with new instructions for the Bush administration. I don't know what the new instructions are going to be, but it's going to be something other than democracy. Something other than democracy. Now, as I make this program, this is the 15th of October, as I'm making this program, we're about 3 weeks away from the elections. I was watching Lehrer last night, and David Brooks, remember the New York Times conservative who is on the Lehrer News Hour on PBS, you know, every Friday night. He said that if he was going to make a prediction, he'd say that the House is going to be lost by 30 seats. 30 seats are going to turn over to the Democrats in the coming election, and that the Senate's going to be lost also. Now listen, President Bush is sitting here on the hot seat. I mean, let's just analyze this now for a second. President Bush has been doing some illegal acts, and the Supreme Court slapped him down not too long ago. And then he just had Congress enact some ex post facto law to prevent prosecution of CIA, FBI, and others who have tortured prisoners and practiced rendition. You know, like Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice talking about and defending rendition. And then the president defending torture, and then they come out with this new bill, Republican bill, so that we can continue on with these military commissions to prosecute these guys and suspend the writ of habeas corpus. Boys and girls, when the Democrats take over the Congress, you can rest assured impeachment will surely follow. Impeachment will surely follow. The Democrats will take over all of the committee chairs, and there will be investigations up the yazoo concerning what's been going on over the last 6 years. So I want you to put this down, you know, put this between your ears. Is President Bush going to allow that, or is President Bush going to come up with an October surprise, such as the Iranians are going to attack one of our aircraft carriers in the Persian Gulf, kind of like the Japs attacked Pearl Harbor and the Germans attacked the Lusitania and the North Vietnamese attacked one of our warships in the Gulf of Tonkin, one of these black box operations, one of these CIA covert operations, so that we can go to war against Iran, so that the president can declare martial law, so that the president can suspend the election. Do you think maybe that might happen? I don't know. I'm not a prophet. I can't tell you. But it's crossed my mind. And it's happened before. And if Hitler could thunk it up, and Franklin D. Roosevelt could thunk it up, I think George Bush could think it up also. If the election were held today, the Democrats would take over. Now, do you think the Republicans are going to let the Democrats take over? Or do you think maybe we're going to have a permanent Republican government from now on to the second coming? Well, shucks, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I'm going to put a mark right here. We'll take it up right here next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Don't forget, the information here is coming from Acres USA. Remember, Acres USA, get a phone number here if you want a copy of this article. Call them, send a $5 bill, but you could call them first. 512-892-4400. That's in Austin, Texas. 512-892-4400. The price is $5 for one issue, and you're looking for the October 2006 Acres USA. All right. Let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by pre-arrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Hey, we're out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course, so until then. Thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.